Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. A new exhibit devoted to ceramics opened over the weekend at Living Arts of Tulsa. It's said that artists working in clay within a group or a studio often create strong connections with one another. According to my guest today, a ceramic studio contributes to that feeling of connectedness. Maybe it's the collaboration of firing the kiln or working the clay or the glazes the studio shares. Living Arts' new exhibit celebrates a Tulsa studio. For 16 years, ceramics professor Whitney Forsyth at the University of Tulsa has led their ceramic studio, and over the years, her students have gone on to become working artists, university professors, and art educators around the country and around the world. She's brought together the work of over 30 ceramic artists from her studio, from current students and alumni alike, to create the show Core Connection, which opened this past Friday and continues on display at the Living Arts Space through January 28th. If you missed the opening, several of the artists and Forsyth will be on hand for a creative cocktail evening this Thursday evening from 5:30 to 7 at the Living Arts Space to talk about the work and the exhibit. Whitney Forsyth is an associate professor of art at the University of Tulsa and curator of Core Connections. Whitney Forsyth, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us how this exhibit came about. I guess you gathered together a lot of old students, some alumnus, and put together this ceramic show. What was the reason for putting this show together?
Well, I felt like it was time that I've been here at TU long enough and have been teaching long enough to get a group of artists that have been through the TU ceramics program and are out on their own as working artists, as well as I have a really wonderful group right now at TU that are undergrad and graduates. And so I just thought the timing was right for me to curate a show bringing all of them back together to highlight their ceramic work.
This is going to document about 16, 17 years of work. Right. Has much changed in the figures and sort of the way people are doing ceramics today? Because one of the interesting thing about ceramics is you can make virtually anything out of ceramics.
I mean, ceramics is an incredibly accessible material, and I find that students are approaching it now in some ways very similar to how they did when I began at TU 17 years ago, and then in some ways they're more experimental. They are trying, different processes. I have students that dip fiber in clay and then burn the fiber out and leave the clay shells. I mean, they seem to be a little bit more experimentive with the actual raw material itself to try to see if they can push the parameters of what it can and can't do. So that's kind of exciting.
Now, of your studio, the people who have gone through your studio, are there a lot of working ceramic artists coming out?
There are. And I have students that are teaching at other universities now. I have a student in the Middle East that started the first BFA program in Palestine, which is really exciting, that came through my MFA program. I have students that are strictly working as full-time artists. I have some students that are doing museum work and are working as art educators. So it's really varied what students do with a degree in ceramics.
So how did you go about assembling all these artists? Are they showing things they did while they were at TU, or are they sending new pieces in?
Right. It's a combination. When I sent out a call, I actually gave them the opportunity to show a student work that they had done while they were a student, to show all new work or a combination of both things. So a lot of them did both, where they showed something they maybe still had that was a favorite piece that they kept while they were at TU, and then showed something new that they had been doing. Cynthia Brown is a local artist here in Tulsa, and she was one of my first MFA students here, and she was a ceramic artist solely, and now she's actually an abstract painter. And so she has some ceramic work and some paintings. So that's, to me, that's the neat part about all of this, is that the ceramics are kind of the foundation, but how artists evolve, the materials might change.
Give us an example of some artists who have, their work has really changed quite a bit since they were in school.
Well, Kate Dameron is another one, and she was an MFA student, and she primarily worked with fiber and dipping it in ceramic slip or liquid clay, and then she would create objects or vessels out of these pieces that she would dip and assemble. And now, and then when she would fire them, all the fiber would burn out and it would leave this wonderful shell. But now her work is primarily fiber. It doesn't have any clay in it at all. So, but you can see some similarity in the forms. But in the materials, it's really changed. But her work has evolved. It is exquisite fiber work, so it's wonderful.
There's a lot of work in ceramics now where at first glance you go, well, that's not ceramics. That's something else. It's glass. Mm-hmm. It's rock. It's sculpture.
Right.
And when you get up close, all of a sudden you realize, oh, this is ceramics. And there are a number of pieces like that.
Right, there are. I mean, clay can really become anything. And some students like to work with it, creating kind of hyper-real images, you know, where you can disguise the material to be something else. And then other students I have really celebrate the raw kind of earthy material that it is, and they allow it to crack and break and do all kinds of interesting things that are more earth-like. So it really can do a variety of things.
Well, once you began getting work in, as you were putting the show together, what was the biggest surprise to you?
I mean, I think the biggest surprise to me was how diverse the work was. And, I mean, I can see my stamp as the teacher on some of it. But what I think was the most surprising to me was to see how different all of these students are working. And so that was really interesting. The other thing that I found to be really interesting is I have some students, we have some very favorite glazes at TU and the glazes that we make, that we formulated in our lab. And those glazes, some of them have stayed over time and students continue to use them. And so to see a piece come from 15 years ago back to the show, and then to see student that has a certain glaze on it, and then to see a piece that's being used now or being made now and has that same glaze, and seeing that there's a different application, but to see that connection of color and surface is really pretty awesome.
Now, for those who are not into ceramics, the glaze sounds like it's almost a signature of sorts.
Yeah, it is. And we have what we call the glaze Bible in our lab, and we have recipes from other universities, from other artists that come as visiting artists. I mean, ceramic artists share information, and so we have compiled this huge ceramic index. But we also have a section in there called our TU favorites, and those are glazes that students have loved over time, and so they're kind of on the top of the list. And those glazes, I see them as being kind of a thread in this exhibition. And I think other artists that have been here in the studio can locate them on other students' work.
So now, is that the same for other studios around the country?
It's
sort of like there's a set of glazes for all the work, and it sort of describes it as being from that particular part of the country.
Yeah, and I think as students work in a studio space, they share information. And so one student uses a glaze or a color or applies it in a certain way, and then another student might try it a little different. So there's lots of variations. So you do see a lot of sharing of information. And I think that is evident in the work also, that you see little glimpses of other people's work, you know, as you go through the exhibition.
Now, when you go to the Living Arts space, one of the first images you see as you walk in the door is this rather large set of tiles that create this portrait of Frida Kahlo. Mm-hmm. And this is something you've done in your classes for a long time.
Right.
What is the importance of this particular piece?
We took a famous self-portrait of Frida Kahlo that she painted of herself, and I actually Xeroxed it, and we cut it into pieces, and each student in the class took a section of it. It's actually in my advanced tile-making class. And each student had an opportunity to recreate that tile or recreate that image in clay as a tile. And then we reassembled the entire painting, you know, with all of the tiles. And so to me, that piece represents kind of the nature of the show, is that everyone is a piece of, you know, of the larger exhibition, and everybody matters. And in that, and what's really neat to me in that tile piece is to see how diverse each piece is. And although it, when put together, it makes this wonderful whole. And so to me, that kind of represents the show, and it represents the way I teach my classes, and it represents kind of the students' experience.
But there are textural differences.
Textural differences, and even when we split it, you know, one artist did one eye, one artist did the other. So one's a little higher, one's a little lower. You know, so each student had their own take on the piece that they got and duplicated it according to how they were perceiving it. And so it was really a wonderful exercise. And I've done it numerous times. We've done a Marc Chagall painting. We did a Van Gogh. But that Frida Kahlo painting seemed to be the one that really represented the exhibition and kind of the diversity of the students' work.
You've done that sort of as an exercise mm-hmm. in classes for a lot of years. What do you learn by cutting up basically an image and saying, okay, yeah. you're going to do this square of
yeah.
it?
I think it celebrates how different we all see things and see what's around us, to see how we take an image and then make it our own. And so to me, allowing students to do that and making sure that they understand that the student sitting next to them is going to look at the same, maybe the same piece they have or the one next to it is completely different, and that's okay. I mean, I really think it gives them the freedom to express and to evaluate what they're doing in a different way.
My guest today is Whitney Forsyth, Associate Professor of Art at the University of Tulsa. She heads the ceramics programs at the university, and she's curator of the exhibit titled Core Connections, Student and Alumni Show from the University of Tulsa, 1999 to 2016, on display at Living Arts of Tulsa through January 28th. Now, you're doing this at Living Arts as opposed to the Alexander Ho Gallery at TU or the Zero Gallery
right.
downtown, which TU also
right.
manages. Why do it outside the campus system?
Well, a couple of reasons. We need a large space.
Yeah.
We have, I can't remember exactly how many students and alumni, but it's a large group. It's more than 30 artists, and each person was allowed to have at least three pieces in the show. So that was really important. But it was also important to me to have it in the community. And so to have it off campus where we might reach a larger audience and we might expose people a little bit more to what the University of Tulsa offers in the School of Art.
Now, are there pieces for sale in the exhibit?
There are pieces for sale, and there are pieces not for sale, too. Some of the students have a hard time letting their work go, but there are some really wonderful tiles, sculptures, vessels, all kinds of things for sale.
And you've said students several times, but we should remember they're all your students
yeah.
over the years. Many
yeah.
of them are
yeah, yeah.
are working artists
yeah,
now.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. They're working artists and alumni that have gone on to have really successful careers in art. So.
Now, as you started getting submissions in, I'm going to put you on the spot to put your curatorial hat
right.
on, if you will. What were some of the things that blew you away when you started seeing it?
I think seeing the scale of work, you know, seeing some large works come back. I think seeing some things that were extremely refined. I mean, Mike Teal did a wonderful piece called Tulsa Deco. That it's a series of 100 tiles that he installed on the wall of Living Arts that celebrates the Art Deco history of Tulsa, but also his sense of precision and refinement in the way that he works with clay.
Is that the continuing design? I think I've seen mm-hmm. seen a picture of it.
Right,
yeah.
right.
And it's a very, very classy sort of 20s design.
It's beautiful.
That just continues.
Yeah, yeah. And he made the work a handmade tile piece that was looks like a fan, made a mold off of it, and then continued to reproduce it. Not sure exactly how he would install it. In fact, he showed it at the student art exhibition that we had here on campus on the floor, and now it's presented on the wall. So he's shown it a few different ways. It's a fabulous piece, very contemporary, but just absolutely beautiful.
What are some of the others?
One of the things that I love about this show, too, is I have some beginning work in the show. Students who take a first semester ceramics class, who their very first ceramic piece they've ever made. There's a piece called by Luke Hembray, who is actually an art history major, but he made this piece called Spike Lee that is this incredible, it looks like a large kind of cockabur. It's green and it has 52 of these little spikes that he glued onto this piece. And it was so fragile, we actually had to hold it in a vehicle on the way down and place it right on the pedestal when we got in there. So some of the technical things that students do as beginners, where they take risks because they don't know any better, and they come out with these absolutely fabulous pieces. And so I think if you walked in that gallery, you might not know which pieces are beginners and which are alumni and which are MFA students and which are undergraduate.
How
majors.
Rare is that for a person the first time out to come up with something that's like, wow, this is...
I think it's very rare. But I find that I have a lot of students that from TU and from the community that come in and have never touched clay before, and they don't really realize what they can do with it, and because they're uninhibited and they don't really know what's right and wrong or what
they
can
they haven't
can't
broken
do,
enough ceramic yet.
They just try it and it works out. And so to me, some of the things that are surprising are the technical risks that students take.
And once you've been doing it a while, you know that the chances of the success are like 20-30%,
right? So, I mean, that to me is really wonderful. And I think it's also been really great for some of the newer students to show with more advanced students and with alumni and to see that their work can reside in a gallery space like that and can be celebrated and recognized regardless of, you know, where they are kind of in their level of working. So that's encouraging.
And, of course, I've always heard with ceramics there's this always this huge element of chance that goes into every every sort of sculptural piece that you do.
Right.
Because you never know how the clay is going to react with the fire. And and it's always a surprise when you open the kiln.
Right. And there's a piece by Donna Washburn. It's a large horse. It's actually half seahorse, half regular horse. And it was it's an incredible visual piece, but the glaze on it is really was a surprise to us. But it accentuated the piece in such an unbelievable way that we could have she could have never planned it that way. And I actually fired it in our large sculpture kiln in the courtyard. And when I opened it, I was so afraid that it might be terrible. And it actually is the most incredible piece that I've seen. And it's on exhibit as well. It's a large sculptural work. And I think unless you're part of the process, you might not know the risk or to think what happens. You've spent a whole semester making the piece, and in one firing, it might make it or it might not. It might crack. It might. There's a variety of things that can happen.
Yeah, and you mentioned that outdoor kiln. That's sort of a more recent addition within the last 5-10 years, I guess.
Right. We built that kiln as a group effort with the matching funds from Jenk and Jerry Jones. They helped fund this wonderful kiln, and so students are able to make incredibly large sculptures.
How large?
6 feet high by 5.5 feet long, and the bottom of the kiln is a large car kiln, so the floor of it wheels out and wheels back in, so it's easy for us to load large work. And one of the things that Steve Liggett mentioned to me, and he's the director of Living Arts, is he mentioned that the scale of the work in the show, Core Connections, was really surprising to him and encouraging to see students taking risks with large work. And he said, because he realizes, you know, as a former ceramic artist and a ceramic artist himself, that lots of things can go wrong. And you could, a whole semester's worth of work could end with a bad kiln firing or with a technical disaster. So it's neat to see a lot of those pieces come out successfully in the show.
Or you create like these multiple pieces that are pieced together, and all of a sudden one firing goes bad and and the whole piece is gone.
Right. Yeah. So it's risky, but it's part of the, I think, the exhilaration of working with clay too, because when it works out right, it encourages you to want to try it again. And so, you know, there's this sense, especially in a community studio, when students see students take risks and find successes with that, then they're much more willing, I think, sometimes to try it themselves. So it's a benefit.
You know, earlier we were talking about ceramic work where it almost transcends what we would think of the media. And I'm thinking of the Philbrook piece of the suitcase that's made out of ceramic.
Right.
You know, are there pieces like that in the show that sort of fool the eye as far as?
Well, they might be fool the eye. Another piece by Mike Teal is a large ceramic gear that is hanging. It's about, I don't know, 3.5 feet by 3.5 feet.
It looks like a rotary gear.
Mm-hmm.
Like
it looks from a large rotary gear. And he had a choice to either make it look like a real gear, like a crusty old cog, you know, something that had been in an industrial factory for a long time, or to make it look like a fragile piece of ceramic. And so he chose to glaze it this incredible blue. So you approach it, you know that it's a gear, but it has you see very clearly that it's ceramic. So that was a slightly different take on your question. Mm-hmm. But we don't really have anything in there, I think, that maybe fools the eye in terms of there are a few natural objects in there, actually. So some things that are larger than life, we have a few pieces of wood or ceramic that looks like wood, or, you know, some seed pods, things like that that might. But they're, most of them are enlarged. So they're, even though they might look like the real object, they're a little larger than life. So
did most of the people who submitted pieces go for the large scale, or do you have some really small, delicate pieces?
We have some intimate things, too. And, but it seems like nothing too intimate. I mean, there's a few things. One of the smaller pieces we have is a small little rabbit that's by Elizabeth Rule, and it's a smaller-than-life rabbit that almost looks like it could be part human in terms of its emotional state. But it's a beautiful piece that sits by itself, needed a little space around it. So, yeah.
Now, you also submitted some work for you have three pieces in the show. Tell us about the three pieces you did.
Well, I have I chose actually a piece that is a few years old, since I had asked students to do the same. And then I have two new pieces. I've been working on a series dealing with the chrysalis form. And so I have a series called Nine, which is 9 3-foot kind of chrysalis that hang together. And then I have one large chrysalis called Sanctuary that is actually the size of my body. It's almost 5.5-6 feet. And it was made specifically as though I were in it.
And, in stasis?
Yes. And the whole idea of those pieces is a lot, the content of the work has to do with transformation and having a period of time where you might go inside or be more, a little bit more internal, and just about changes that are happening in life and ways in which you might, you know, be in a chrysalis type state. And so that's what the pieces are about, you know, and I've done a lot of research on cocoons and chrysalises and this idea of them being kind of a protection, from maybe a harsh environment or from,
aren't they in nature, aren't they woven pieces though?
Some of them are woven, and, cocoons are a little bit more hardy, uh-huh. I think, than the chrysalis. But one of the things I loved, especially with the monarch, is that towards the end of the cycle, before the butterfly comes out, the chrysalis actually becomes somewhat transparent, so you can actually see the butterfly colors through the cocoon. And so the pieces that I have in the show that are made out of ceramic are in that state where you can see what's inside and the colors that are coming from beneath.
So is that a multi-fired process, or is it just something created and we put the whole thing in the
created.
Oven?
It's created. Yeah, my pieces are fired, and then I actually use a post-fired surface. So I use oil washes or oil patinas on the surface. And one of the reasons I use this process is so I can get that transparency and that layered look. It's been a part of my work for a long time, but it really suits, I think, the content of this work particularly, in that I want that transparency and kind of that life from within to come through in the ceramic work.
Now, how does this compare with the work from a few years ago?
You know, my work has always been focused around natural forms, and it's always been it tells a story or is somewhat a narrative of personal experiences that I've had. I think the scale has changed a lot, you know, so the size is increased. I think right now I'm really interested in multiples still. That's been kind of a constant for me, is I can't just make one chrysalis. I have to make 9 because they work well as a unit. And so it's about a community or a groupings and how they relate to one another as well as how they are individually. But you see that a lot in nature as well. You see, you know, a field of flowers or a grouping of seeds or things that are collected together. So that's important.
Now, as you say that, I'm thinking of some of the work I've seen at the Hogue Gallery over the years, and there does tend to be that sort of influence on natural forms.
Right.
Do you see that in this show? Or do you see the sort of counteracting force, if you will, from a teacher's influence?
I do. I mean, I see definitely an influence in some of the projects that I give. And I see the natural textures, natural forms, things like that. So one of the projects I give is that we duplicate a natural form so that we look at the form, the surface, the texture, the colors, and get students to think about, you know, examining that and then duplicating it. And so that's one element in which I have a direct impact on my students. And then some of them you know, go far away from that, you know, and are very technically minded or interested in industrial forms or, you know, things like that. Or some – actually, I've had quite a few students come through that are very interested in the figure, which is something I don't do. And so that's been some way – a way in which actually I learn from my students because they might be interested in using a model or – imagery or using themselves in that way too. So,
and it sounds like from your description of the exhibit, one of the things that your studio has is sort of this very collaborative spirit. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the things you wanted to highlight in the core connections.
Right. And we, you know, community studios, especially in ceramics, that's what it's all about. We work together. Not only to produce the work, but we have to rely on each other to make clay, to help load kilns, to, I mean, there's a real community element to working in a very healthy clay studio. And I hope that that's what my students come away with is this is what it's like to be part of a community clay studio. This is how we help each other. This is how we learn from each other. This is how we function as artists. And I think it's one of the things that my alumni say now that they've been gone for a while that they miss is being part of that community studio. You can find them at different places in the United States, but university studios are pretty special places where a lot of amazing ideas and shared information is experienced. And I really enjoy – that's one of the reasons I enjoy teaching, too, is to be a part of that and to continue to cultivate it within the studio.
You know, one of the takeaways for a healthy university art studio, whatever the medium, right, is eventually it affects the community at large.
Right.
You think we're going to see examples of that, of the ceramic community here in the city that's come out of that studio?
I hope so. I see it, little bits and pieces. And, you know, I see students of mine.
It's a tough way to make a living, too.
It is a tough way to make a living. And so I find a lot of my students are working as teachers, having a studio at home, or, you know, they're working as production potters and they're, down at the farmer's market selling their wares. So, yeah, but I think I think there is an element of it that goes into the Tulsa community, but then beyond, you know, where students, like I was mentioning, my student that went back to Palestine to create one of the first BFA programs there and being able to take a piece of Tulsa back with him.
Do they have the Tulsa glazes?
Yes, they might have the Tulsa glazes there. But I have a student teaching in Salt Lake City, and I have a student living in Portland, Oregon that's working. And then I have students working at the Philbrook and the Gilcrease in the Zero Center. And so to me, it doesn't really matter where they end up as long as they you know, are remembering, you know, what they've taken from TU and the good and the bad and making it their own wherever they are, you know, creating another positive art environment for other students or for coworkers or for themselves.
So. Well, you can see the results at the Living Arts of Tulsa Core Connection featuring students and alumni from the University of Tulsa over the last 16 years. The work is on display through January 28th. Whitney, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rich.
Whitney Forsyth is an associate professor of art at the University of Tulsa and curator for the exhibit Core Connections, student alumni show from the University of Tulsa, 1999 to 2016, currently on display at the Living Arts of Tulsa through January 28th. If you missed the opening this past Friday evening, there'll be a special creative cocktail evening at Living Arts this Thursday from 5:30 to 7, featuring a number of the artists as well as Forsyth talking about the work in the exhibition. For more information, visit livingarts.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.